You're listening to Radio Netherlands, the Dutch international service. Africa, Michelle Ernsting presents A Peace for Everyone, a look at how Namibia's many peoples are living together after decades of war.
In 1990, Namibia won independence from neighbouring South Africa. It was the last colony on the continent. After 30 years of a brutal civil war, freedom came with huge celebrations and huge expectations. One man was credited as the father of the nation, Sam Nujoma, the man who led the Southwest African People's Organization, SWAPO, to victory. Nujoma became the country's first president, and the first thing he did after coming to power was to urge the country's 11 main ethnic groups to set aside old grievances and work together for their common future. He poured money into education and healthcare for all Namibians, and the people loved him for it. Seven years later, I arrived in the capital, Windhoek, as Namibian university students, young people from all over the country, held a noisy parade to urge all Namibians to join together to become part of the developed world. I jumped into one of the raucously decorated cars and spoke to two students.
I work with Radio Netherlands, and I was here to make a program about Namibia after independence. And can I ask you that? How much do you think things have changed since independence? Do you have more chances, do you think, for the future? Are you more hopeful about what you can do in the future?
Yeah, definitely. I think since independence, things has changed. This country was divided, but now everything is free. It's up to individual to struggle to build the country.
And compared with, let's say, your parents, do you see any limits to what you can do?
Right now, I don't think there's any limit. It's of this independence and human rights which has come up, so most things are like free. You can do whatever you want to do.
This optimism is so heartening, but in truth, it's no longer felt by everyone. When independence was declared, Sam Nujoma promised that all of Namibia's 1.6 million inhabitants would have a say in developing the kind of country they wanted. But the divisions between people run deep, and the unity among Namibia's black ethnic groups, which existed during wartime, is faltering in peace. Sam Nujoma is the first to admit that keeping all of Namibia's people happy is more difficult than he thought it would be.
There is quite a great difference between being a leader of a national liberation movement to a leader of a country. You are responsible for everything, including the opposition, including even those who were your adversaries. And we have adopted a policy on national reconciliation, which enables us to embrace each other, to work together for the common good of our people. It was a little bit difficult at the beginning because everyone was suspicious of the other. But when we open up our arms, for example, we have not sent back the South African colonial administrators. They remained here. We welcome them to stay. And up to now, they are still with us. Thus enable us to build a very strong foundation of national unity, of one Namibia, one nation. As we are a multiracial society. Now, I must say that every Namibian, irrespective of color or race, goes and do his or her business without really bothering that I'm white or I'm black or I'm colored. So we succeeded through the government, the policy of national unity. And we continue with this policy. It served us very well. There is peace.
There is indeed peace, but Sam Nujoma paints a rosy picture of black-white relations. There exists a reservoir of resentment against the country's minority white population, who still occupy top jobs and own the vast majority of the country's 4,000 commercial farms. Reconciliation without redistribution of wealth is a hollow concept for many. And people are beginning to take their grievances to the streets. It's not in most Namibians' nature to show dissent, but I persuaded one nervous demonstrator to explain why he and other government workers were out protesting on the streets of Windhoek.
This is the Minister of Environment and Tourism, and the workers are busy now to show their grievances.
And what do the employees want?
We want the top management to be restructured according to the affirmative action.
But some people are carrying posters that say stop racism. So you think the hiring policy is still racist in a sense?
Yeah. As we all know that Namibia have just got independence, apartheid and racism, discrimination is still exist in Namibia. I mean, not in Namibia, but I mean in this ministry. The top management especially is full occupied by the white people. We are not discriminating them. We welcome them, but only the system they have. We don't want that system. They want them to change.
These people want to be able to move up into management positions, but almost half of all Namibians cannot even find jobs. Unemployment is considered to be the most serious issue now facing the country. Since independence, people from all corners of Namibia have converged on the capital to find some kind of work to support their families back home. Downtown Windhoek is modern and clean. There are parks, expensive hotels, and pricey cars. The crime rate is relatively low, and there are no people living on the street, and only a handful of disabled beggars. The only Namibians I met making money on the streets was a group of 9-year-old boys playing music on instruments made of inner tubes, tins, and bottle tops. They played while young girls danced. But after a few minutes, the boys were quickly shooed away by omnipresent security guards, one of the few jobs open to thousands of former soldiers desperate for work. But most Namibians looking for work don't go to downtown Windhoek. Instead, they drift into squatters' camps such as Katatura on the outskirts of the city. The camps are crowded. Corrugated tin shacks stretch over the horizon farther than the eye can see. There's not a tree or shrub around, no shade from the relentless summer sun, no shelter from the winter winds. Desert sand blows into every broken window and under every roof. It's Saturday evening in Katatura, and the men are sitting about drinking beer while the women make dinner over open fires. Children play in the dirt. I asked one woman from the Damara ethnic group about why she came to Windhoek.
I'm born in Namibia. I come from Kermanshoop. I'm born in Kermanshoop. When I finish with my school in Kermanshoop, I start my work in Windhoek and I'm working here. I don't find a really good job because I don't have really good qualifications.
And you said you have four kids, four children, and how do you support them?
I support them with that little bit of money. $100 to my children, $100 to my mother. I got a place which I rent. I pay $100. I make a plan to build up my place. Yesterday the house, you saw it. How does it look? You saw how I stay. The rain is coming in the house. The wind blows out the house. Children is sick. There's no food.
And can I ask you how your life has changed since independence?
Independence was not so good for us. There are changes, but there are times we think independence was really no good.
This is a common view. People are bitter that their lives have not improved as was promised. In some cases, they've gotten worse as some investment and jobs trickled out of the country with independence. But not everyone feels this way. Another woman I spoke to, Sarah, said independence has improved her life, if only a little.
It's very good. It's great. Very help.
She says she's very happy about it because she gets certain rights now which she never had before. She, for example, could buy this earth where they're staying on now. and they get help from the municipality, and they work it out according to her salary. And she says she's very happy about it. They at least get assistance, and they can go and they ask the questions, and they listen to her, and she feels she has got certain rights now.
Is she more optimistic about the future, and especially her children? Does she think they'll have more chances than perhaps she's had?
Sarah, denk jy die toekoms gaan goed lyk?
Ja. As ek net werk kry, dan sal hy mooi uitkom.
She said if she gets a job now, then she will look at it very positively, because then she can also send her children to school.
Everything depends on getting a job, but for now, unemployment continues to rise, and the tin shacks of the squatters' camp sprout up along its far edges. At Independence, people thought the government would look after their needs. The SWAPO leadership preached that wealth should be shared. When SWAPO came to power, many investors fled in the fear that their capital would be seized. This didn't happen. Sam Nujoma left most sectors untouched, hoping instead that companies would soon open their doors to newly trained black workers. His government cleverly renegotiated deals with mining companies, which would direct more money to the government without significantly hurting private sector profits. Namibia has been praised by the World Bank and the IMF, and even U.S. President Bill Clinton, who held the country up as a shining example for other African nations.
Namibia has been highly praised for being a democratic country with a very liberal, acceptable constitution. But I have to say, you cannot eat democracy.
Henning Melber is the director of the Namibian Economic Policy Research Unit, which advises the government.
If you praise the democracy of our society and the human rights record and pluralism and everything, and let's say the favorable conditions actually for investment, then I would expect from investors to support us by investing. This has not happened, funny enough.
Any reasons why?
Maybe because Namibia is not really attractive. You make huge profits not in Namibia, you make them in Nigeria. No matter what the human rights track record is, you make them in China, for that matter, no matter what the human rights track record is. Capital never ever really invested because of, let's say, human rights issues. They invest because they want to make secure profit.
As Henning Melber says, industry rarely invests in human rights. But for Sam Nujoma's policy of reconciliation to work, he has to attract investors to create jobs. Otherwise, the pressure on less powerful ethnic groups such as the Damara and the Herero will grow, leading to a dangerous rise in frustration levels. But despite the drop in investment, Namibia has maintained a kind of financial independence. It accepts less aid than any of its neighbors and has not yet had to knock on the World Bank's door for help. But while this looks good on paper, Henning Melber is worried about the future.
There is no external debts so far. That's also why there are no structural adjustment programs looming for Namibia. The World Bank and the IMF would find it very difficult to step on Namibia's toes. But one must critically also add, Namibia is living on borrowed time, and the lending and expenditure patterns are actually slightly worrying when it comes to the future.
Why is that? Can you explain?
Namibia has failed to create a diversified economy the last 7 years. Admittedly, it would have been very difficult in such a short period of time, but there are not meaningful value-added activities introduced. The money that is borrowed has increased, and there will come the years where you have to repay, and then with interest rates, and that will become very painful.
That's quite a bleak outlook.
It's a sobering outlook, not necessarily bleak, it's sobering. I wouldn't now draw a very, very dark picture, but one should really see that it will be very tough in the future, yes.
One of the country's main problems in attracting investors is the constant threat of drought. Water is precious here and very expensive. Two serious droughts in the past 5 years brought the country to the brink of famine, and no one can predict when this will happen again. I was in Windhoek during the springtime. Most people thought it was quite cool, but after a week I was going mad with the heat, and in the wake of a choking evening sandstorm, I decided to do what Namibia's elite does for relief. I hopped in the car and drove 300 kilometers out to the west coast, to the cool Atlantic Ocean. To get to the Atlantic coast from Windhoek, you have to go through hundreds of kilometers of scrub and brush and dry, yellow, arid land. And finally, when you get to the ocean, you expect to see a bit of greenery, something lush finally. But in fact, this is where the desert, the serious desert, is located. Behind me, despite the fact that in front of me there are crashing waves, behind me there is a sea of rolling golden dunes. It's absolutely spectacular to see. And if I were to go south from here, I would go through hundreds of kilometers of desert, but I probably wouldn't be allowed in because that's where some of the finest diamonds in the world are located and are very well protected. And if I was to go north from here, I'd go through another couple of hundred kilometers of what's known as the Skeleton Coast. Now, this land, this incredible desert, may seem like a curse. I mean, it's completely uninhabitable and the climate is unbelievably hostile. But in fact, it was, in a way, a blessing for Namibia, because for hundreds of years it kept explorers from the west and traders at bay. But eventually, people mainly from England and Germany did manage to get a toehold along this coast and to exploit some of the fabulous riches that are here, in the form of diamonds, of course, and the fishery, which is one of the best in the world. And the descendants of those settlers are still here.
Das schönste Mädchen der Welt ist meine
German music, German radio, German restaurants, German architecture. This is the coastal town of Swakopmund, a Teutonic oasis for those who like that kind of thing. The massive desert dunes creep right up to the town limits, but in Swakopmund, people have green lawns and lush gardens. The town's residents are overwhelmingly white. The first German settlers arrived here at the end of the last century, and Germany colonized Southwest Africa in 1908. During their short but brutal reign, the Germans carried out a policy of genocide on the largest tribe in the region, the Hereros, shifting the balance of power in favor of the Ovambo tribe. Despite the fact that the Germans were ousted in 1915, the community still controls much of the country's wealth. Henning Melber explains.
It's very influential. They control to some extent part of the local manufacturing. They are extremely important when it comes to the, let's say, independent professions like lawyers, advocates, other things. They are clearly overrepresented on higher management levels. They are running the smaller businesses. They are in control of lots of the retail businesses, shop owners, etc. So the German community is economically, I would say, the most influential still in Namibia, proportionally speaking.
And are they at all open to new workers coming in from other ethnic groups that haven't been represented on their boards in the past?
Like most other population groups in Namibia, this is not a uniform group. So it depends on whom you look at. There are some very enlightened and sophisticated people, and they are very stubborn and backward-oriented too. Maybe one should say the German-speaking community in Namibia represents both extremes the most. So the German-speaking population group, while the majority always claims that they don't want to be involved in politics, have a considerable minority both on the right wing as well as on the, let's say, more liberal, maybe even left wing.
But the uglier elements of the German right wing continue to threaten race relations. Nazis old and new annually commemorate the death of Rudolf Hess, and 2 years ago, two old women took a full-page ad out in a national newspaper to celebrate Adolf Hitler's achievements. But this kind of behavior, any act of racism for that matter, is illegal under Namibia's post-independence constitution. Despite this, racial tension rumbles under the surface. The Herero have never recovered from their loss of land and power. They are a proud people. The women still wear traditional Victorian dresses of 12 layers of cloth, styled after 19th century English settlers. The men wear neat suits and hats. Few Herero will openly complain about the situation. Dissent of any kind is frowned upon. Up until very recently, criticism of Sam Nujoma was unheard of and still seems to be a kind of taboo. The one man who does speak up, and very loudly, is considered something of a national pariah. Phil Yanangolo runs the National Society for Human Rights. I asked him how people react to his outspoken views.
In private, some of them even say, no, continue, you are doing a very good job, please go ahead. But in public, the same person who was commending you in privacy, in public they come out and condemn you. And so it is very, very strange. I think we have a state of split personality that is taking place in this country. But their public reaction is very, very hostile. Sometimes become really frightened, thinking perhaps that tomorrow you are going to be shot or something. There is quite amount of fear. Fear is reigning in this Namibia. When you talk to people, you can just go in the street and try to interview somebody. You see his or her reaction. He will start looking to the sides as if there is somebody watching him or her. And that's the fear that we have.
You say there's fear, but at the same time, there is freedom of speech here in the country.
Well, there is freedom of speech. Yes, it is entrenched in the Constitution. And the press is pretty much vigorous. There is no doubt about it. And we are very happy about that. In fact, the press have always been critical, even before independence. But if you hear the president, the head of state, calling newspapers reactionaries and unpatriotic, that tells you that if he had his own way, he could have done exactly the same as the South African regime before independence has been doing. He simply cannot do that because he cannot keep a balance from his image. He wants to be seen as a protector of human rights on one side, at the same time cannot afford to go and bomb the press. But he's not alone. Other leaders of the government are engaged in these anti-media epithets, and they call them enemy and foreign and things like that. Things that are really outrageous in a democracy like we have.
As Phil Yanangolo says, people don't like to talk about politics here. Perhaps the idea of reconciliation is still too fragile to weather critical discussion. There is concern that dissent could release a Pandora's box of ethnic grievances. Young people have grown up in this cautious atmosphere of watchful silence. As a result, even after 7 years of peace, they seem to be apolitical. Young writer Joseph Molopong.
Most of us, most of the young people, the politics ended when independence arrived, you know. So after independence, people are no longer political. It's a matter of individual survival, you know. You try to work on your own way to make a living. So political-wise, there's no much participation in it, you know. So I can't really say whether they are critical of the government and their whatever stories, or they are in support of the government. But with the older generation, it is a matter of being patriotic, as they say, you know. You always try to be loyal to the ruling party. That's why the percentage is always growing, you know, because there's no other alternative but to vote, for instance, in the elections, you know, to vote for the current government, yeah. Because the opposition itself is very weak, you know. It is high. Like now, the way things are now, there's no official opposition in Namibia as such.
Now, can I, if you don't want to answer this question, feel free, but are you happy with the way the government has been working since independence?
No one can be pleased with what is happening currently, you know, with these payouts and the benefits the presidents, the ministers and deputy ministers are enjoying, you know, in contrast to the situation people are facing day to day in Namibia. So no one can be quite pleased with what is happening now.
The payout Joseph referred to was a government scheme to award ministers big pensions and household allowances without public discussion. The papers got wind of the story, and for the first time since independence, criticism flowed in from all quarters, regardless of ethnicity. But within the week, Sam Nujoma revoked the scheme. A minor political crisis was averted. But this is nothing compared to the storm that is approaching. Sam Nujoma is nearing the end of his second term. Two terms are allowed under the Constitution. Many people fear a return to violence after he leaves. Tonis Kulder of Namibia's Institute for Democracy explains how Nujoma may be kept in power.
There are few arguments being used at the moment, the one being that the president wasn't elected by the people the first time round, so the first term doesn't count. Another possibility would be a change of the constitution. And then a third provision that has been proposed was that an article should be added to the constitution stating that the first president will be allowed to serve three terms due to the transition process, which maybe would be the best of the three bad arguments, or the best of the worst, because it would effectively then limit his term to 3 years, and that would give the party time to also groom the successor.
But everyone understands that a successor will have to be chosen from the powerful Ovambo ethnic group, the group which Sam Nujoma himself is a part of. They are a majority force in the country and have the last say in politics, much to the chagrin of other groups who have to be satisfied with ministerial positions. Choosing a successor to Sam Nujoma is a precarious ethnic balancing act. Many people want Nujoma to stay on, but on this point, I found him inscrutable.
Well, I think so long able to stand up and make a contribution, I'm ready to do so all the time in whichever capacity I may be able to do so. Because for me, it's really a question of laying together with my fellow citizens, irrespective of their color or race or political affiliation, a strong foundation upon which the future generation of this country will continue to build on.
So what does that mean? Does that mean are you or are you not running for a third term? What do you think?
Well, the third term, the Namibian people have asked me to do so. They think that I still can make a contribution to strengthening the foundation of unity and that of economic reconstruction and building a strong matriarchal society in our country. And so long I'm in a position to be able to do so, I will participate. And this is a united effort of all Namibians. It's not just one man show. It's not to Sam Nujoma that does that. It's the combination of a united people. And I think we all have a political will to work together for the common good of all our people.
But still, you're quite crucial. You know, whatever people think of the government, they think highly of you. And so whether or not you run is quite important for the future of the country, and also whether or not you name a successor, and yet you've been reluctant to do that.
Of course, a successor, we have procedures. In the party, we have the president, we have the vice president, we have the secretary general, and if the president is not there, the vice president automatically takes over. And if the vice president is not there, the secretary general takes over, or the party central committee elect a new leadership altogether. So the procedures are there.
I'm not going to get an answer from you.
No, that's it.
Kasia to pundom yenge pamwe
Sam Nujoma, the father of the nation, has long been considered the only man who can unite Namibia's diverse peoples. But there are many signs that reconciliation has taken root. On my last day in Namibia, I was sitting in the park in the center of Windhoek when a dignified man in his 50s approached me. He looked very tired, but very tidy in a suit worn out from ironing. He handed me a petition which said, David Ndongwe is dying of cancer. He urgently needs an operation. A donation to help him is very welcome. The message was printed on Health Ministry stationery and stamped with official seals authorizing a collection. I asked the man if David was a friend or family member, and he said, I am David. I didn't know what to say. I gave him my last Namibian dollars. He asked me to sign the petition, and when I glanced down the list, I saw that Ndaitwas were followed by Reinholds and Angulas by Niekerks, people from all ethnic groups in Namibian society, black, white, Ovambo, Damara, had chosen to help this dying man. I felt a bit more optimistic that Sam Nujoma's vision of reconciliation would live on after him.
A Piece for Everyone was produced and presented by Michelle Ernsting. Technical production was by Ayan DeRoz. This has been a Radio Netherlands presentation.
omyenge, omyenge. Obinyambade, omyenge, omyenge. Omyenge, omyenge.